This is Equestrian Legacy Radio's Saddle Up America, heard around the world online at equestrianlegacy.net.
Sudden clouds go sailing by. You take the darkness, you take the light. Follow the trail beyond your sight. Love is unforeseen and strange. It's only constant in its change. It needs the thunder. It needs the steam, it needs the heat, it needs the truth. Oh, won't you wait a little while before you cry, before you smile? Love will grow cold, it will grow warm. True love is like a mountain storm. Thing you know, the sun will shine. See a double rainbow through the pines. Oh, won't you wait a little while before you cry, before you smile? Love will grow cold, it will grow warm. True love is light.
Good afternoon again from Nashville, Tennessee. This is your host, Gary Holt. And if it is the first Thursday of the month, it's time for Backcountry Horsemen of America. And today we'll be joined by our special guest, the Executive Director of Backcountry Horsemen of America, Mr. Jim McGarvey, and the new Chairman of BCHA, Freddie Dunn. We want to thank our sponsor. Equestrian Legacy Radio is made possible by Legacy Benefit Group for over 30 years. Legacy Benefit Group has helped businesses and individuals create, protect, and preserve their financial legacy. So this is going to be a very special show today. We want to invite you to take a deep seat in your saddle, grab a big cup of coffee, and we'll be coming back. We'll be joined by Jim McGarvey and Freddie Dunn on Saddle Up America.
I'm glad to be anywhere with Cafe's the place I like the best. On the chilly side, a paradise in the great and grand old west. And I'm a lucky boy, that's where I'm from. And that's where you can find me when it's all said and done. Yes, and I've seen the green of Tennessee, the colored lights of the New York night. Stood in a red sunset on the beach in Texas in the moonlight. But nothing sets my spirit free, and no other color can do. Like the winds of old Wyoming and Colorado blue. See them old Rockies rising straight up through the cool blue air. Sip that cold white water running down to make you feel like a grizzly bear. And at sundown I sit and watch them gleam. Comes so close to glory, not even in a dream. One night by the campfire light, we cooked up some rainbow trout. But she left me down around Pagosa Springs with a hook still in my mouth. I remember the mountain ride. And girl there with the sun in her hair and Colorado blue in her eyes. Yes, and when I'm away from my native state and my dreams ain't coming true, when lost and lonesome is my fate and it looks like I'm bound to lose, it's a homesick misfit, sorry face, a thrashing him his own Jew. Well, you can call that skinny cowpoke at the end of the bar Colorado blue. Just call that skinny cowpoke at the end of the bar Colorado blue.
Well, that's Colorado Blue by Gary McMahon, and I can't think of Backcountry Horsemen of America without thinking about those beautiful trails out through the West. And Jim McGarvey, for about 5 years now, you have become the unofficial co-host for Saddle Up America.
Unofficial, keep that in mind, yes. But we've had a lot of fun over the 5 years, Gary, for sure.
We have. Well, you've got a very special guest that you're bringing on the show today. Why don't you go ahead and introduce Freddie to us?
I sure will. Yeah, excited to have our special guest. Barbara Freddie Dunn of Utah. She's the first national chairwoman of the Backcountry Horsemen of America. That's 43 years in the making here, if you will. And it's a good move. I think that we found that, like with the American Quarter Horse, did their member survey, and of a quarter of a million members, the majority are women. And I think that's the case with the Backcountry Horsemen too. And so it's good to have Freddie on. I know Freddie, we grew up about 50 miles apart, Freddie in Cincinnati and me in Dayton, and I think we first met in Branson, Missouri in 2010 at the National Backcountry Board meeting. So Freddie, how did you start out in Cincinnati and end up in Utah?
Well, and hello to both you and Gary.
Hi, Freddie.
You know, it was a long road getting there. as a kid, I was always a horse crazy little girl, but never got to be around horses except on vacation in Canada. And so I would spend the 2 weeks vacation at the stables. And my parents would, you know, think about how terrible I smelled when I got home every night. But I finally got a chance to move west in around 1992 or 93. And at that point, was able to buy my first horse and start enjoying the trails of Colorado. I lived in near Aspen and that area, and spent a lot of time riding in Colorado and enjoying the backcountry there. Obviously, from Aspen and Basalt area, we were a couple hours from just some incredible, beautiful riding in the backcountry, and took great advantage of it then. But where I was in Colorado, there was no chapter of backcountry horsemen, so I didn't know anything about it. And it wasn't until my husband and I moved to St. George, Utah, where we saw on the activity page of the newspaper this meeting about backcountry horsemen. And when you don't, you know, you've got horses and you don't know where to go ride, we thought, well, what the heck, let's go and visit this group. And that was around 2000. And 17 years later, I've gone from being involved in my chapter to being involved with my state, and now being involved with the national organization for almost 10 years. So it's very humbling to be the first female chairman, I assure you.
Well, I think you bring a lot of experience. Go ahead, Gary. Yeah, yeah.
No, I was just going to say that Freddie's story is so much the story of so many people that are involved in horses. You know, you had an affection for horses when you're growing up, but you couldn't have one at that time, and then eventually you got your first horse. And then hit the trails. And just recently, I had a young lady that contacted me, and she said, you know, I need to find people with. Who would you suggest? And so I invited her to become a member of Middle Tennessee's Backcountry Horsemen of America on Facebook. And the next day she was out trail riding with these folks. And so who knows where that may end up. You know,
one of the things that we have to say is that we're not really a riding group. We are a service organization, but we sure do a lot of riding.
Yeah. But to be introduced to Backcountry Horsemen of America because you enjoy horses and you enjoy the trails, you know, this lady may become chairman of Backcountry Horsemen one day. You never know.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Jim?
Yeah, and I think when people that, you know, like their first time out with a backcountry horseman, or you hear about them, or you realize that it's not elves that clean these trails and cut these logs off the trails, that it's real people. And then a lot of the folks that learn that think, well, how can I help with these trails? And so it's a good way to get folks started, just go out riding and talking about it. And I think also a lot of our members in the Western states, you know, are several generations of living in the West, but we've got a lot that have just one day picked up a dart and threw it at a Western map, and that's where they went. Literally, that's where they went.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So people just, you know, had it with the, you know, just working in the East of crowds and everything, just go West. And it's always great stories to hear, just like Freddie mentioned, how great it is out there. And, tell us a little. I was saying, Fred, tell us a little bit about where you ride, and I know you're involved with the national parks, and maybe tell folks kind of what it's like out there, and you know, on the ground and on a horse.
All right, I live in the very southwest corner of Utah, and we are about an hour from Zion National Park. We're 2 hours from Bryce National Park, and 2 hours from the north rim of the Grand Canyon. We have some of the most beautiful riding in the world within 2 hours of us. And yet we still have more riding just outside our back door. I live in a county that is 75% public land.
Wow.
Think about that. 75%. Wow. I can ride out of my back door and be on public land just outside of my neighborhood, and I could ride pretty much darn near through the state of Utah by zigzagging up it. But Utah is unique because we have such incredible geology and so many national parks that we have all of this public land. And unfortunately, there are people trying to take that away and make public land, put it in private hands or manage it differently. And in some respects, there are a lot of things about our public lands that do need to be managed differently. But our job is to make sure with Backcountry Horsemen that we have access to those public lands that we've always had.
Now, Utah is one of the states that the majority of Utah is public land, isn't it?
It is. It's Utah and Nevada.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. How do the folks in Utah feel about the proposal to turn so much of the public land into private holdings?
You know, it's a very difficult subject to broach with many people. You have people who feel very proprietary towards the land if they have been here for generations, and whether it's the federal government that's keeping them off the land or someone's private, they, you know, feel that something else should be done, that they should have access because they've always had access. I think many of us feel that having this public land in Utah is such a privilege because this land is so unique and people come from all over the world to see it, and it's sitting here in our backyard, that, and we view it every day, and we forget how precious and unique it is. And these lands, I came from Cincinnati, but I knew that those lands out in the West were partially mine because they belong to all of us. And
absolutely.
So we want to keep it in public lands, in public hands, but I'd sure like to make sure that we have a little voice in having more money given to it by Congress so that they could manage it better, and working in conjunction with some of the local entities as well.
Yeah. I think a lot of folks that are back here in the East, where we don't have that situation, where so much of the land is public, really don't understand what it means to have access to those public lands, because they're not getting out and enjoying them, and in many cases making their livings, if you're a rancher, by having access to the public lands as well. So it's kind of a geographic and demographic thing that I think helps to shape people's opinions about where the land should be public or private. And we've talked about this before, Jim, but I really feel that we need to leave a legacy to our children so that those lands are public, and so we and our generations to follow can enjoy the lands that we hold precious, you know. But anyway,
absolutely,
I interrupted.
Gary, one of the problems is that actually the visitation to the public lands in the West is increasing dramatically. Zion mm-hmm. National Park is over 5 million visitors already. People are more mobile, and they are coming out to enjoy the public lands in the West. And systematically, Congress has been cutting back the funds to the managers who manage that land. And, you know, it's hard to do a good job when you don't have the tools.
That's right. That is right. And some of the proposed legislation will reduce even further the number of employees, which means reduced access to the land. out there.
It does in many ways. And so we certainly stay on top of that. And our members are encouraged to talk to their congressmen and their senators so that we can have a voice that's heard in Washington.
Absolutely. And Jim, I think we're just kind of led into one of your topics that you wanted to discuss, and that was an overview of the challenges they're facing America's
trails. Well, it is. One thing that, before we jump into the, we've been talking about the bigger picture, which is what you do when you're the national chairman of the Backcountry Horsemen. The big picture is kind of occupies your time and vision. But where does your local chapter, what park or public land does it concentrate on, you know, on as work details, including trails?
Well, I can tell you that my chapter is a very unique chapter in the country because we have interactions with 5 different land management agencies. So we interact with the Dixie National Forest, which is just north of St. George. We interact with Zion National Park. We interact with our state lands. Right across the road from me is Snow Canyon State Park, which is a beautiful park. We interact with the BLM because we've got quite a bit of BLM land around us. And we also have an area called the Red Cliffs Desert Reserve, which is now being managed by the BLM, but is 60,000 acres of land that is being protected for the desert tortoise. And so we have done work for all 5 of those agencies over the years that I have been here.
Well, yeah, that is interesting because most chapters just deal with the national forest maybe or a national park, or even the state park. But to deal with all of them, you've got to be conversant about how they operate because while they all report to the – ultimately to the U.S. taxpayer, but they have different procedures in how they go about things. And
Sure they do. For example, here's an interesting one you probably don't know, Jim. At Zion National Park, a group of horses can go in, but there can only be 12 heartbeats in that group. 12 heartbeats.
Wow.
So that means 6 riders.
Yeah,
and if
wow.
you're going into the backcountry, you've got to then allow for a pack horse, so that reduces the people. So it's, you know, you have to know the rules of that particular park because every national park is slightly different. But at least we have access to it, and, you know, it's a beautiful place to be able to go ride.
Yeah, I know that.
And we do think.
Yeah, go ahead.
And we do different things for different land managers. In Dixie National Forest, we are unusual because we do have a pack crew that works out of our particular national forest in our ranger district. A lot of Utah does not have anyone who packs. And so we do very little packing here. My group is more urban, but we do trailhead maintenance. We have packed in things. We put tie rails, metal tie rails back at an overlook overlooking Snow Canyon State Park. So it was located on, it was just outside of wilderness because we have some newly created wilderness there. For the BLM, we've done, you know, just very minimal things. For the Red Cliffs Desert Reserve, a lot of it has just been trying to keep the trails marked and keep people on the trails. It is mostly sand. And so because it is a preserve for the desert tortoise, people need to stay on the trail and, you know, keep hoof prints on those trails.
Well, you know, you mentioned the heartbeats. I know that when Backcountry Horsemen is Randy Rasmussen, a public lands advisor, working with the Sequoia Kings Canyon National Forest, number of heartbeats became an issue. And so not only keeping the trail miles mm-hmm. open, but the heartbeats, I think we got reduced from 18 to 16, but in all things considered, that was a good trade-off, you know, for the way things are evolving. But heartbeats, for folks that haven't heard that, you know, kind of think twice about it. But Yeah, it's two and paired up, so the heartbeats.
Now that's not in a group. That's totally in the park area. Is that correct?
No, it's a group.
It's in a group. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I don't know the spacing between Group A and Group B, but it's sort of identified as a group, a pack string or what have you. I guess it applies to Wrangler franchises also, where they bring in day riders, you know, to the park and spend a couple hours on a horse. I imagine also. Freddie, you know, what have you been facing on the national scene? I know we talked about the land problems, but are there any specific things that you and Randy and the exec committee are working on that are threatening, if you will?
Well, the biggest threat was the 2018 budget, I think, where the president's budget would have cut funding to the national forest by almost 75%. And that would have been catastrophic for the national forests across the country. So luckily, the Congress or the committee, actually, the Appropriations Committee, did not follow that guideline. And I believe Randy told us that the funding is similar to 2017 and perhaps down a couple of percentage points. So, you know, being aware and having our members talk to their senators, tell them how much they enjoy the trails, let them know the work that we do to keep the trails open is important. And having an organization that spans the country is very helpful when we need to get that word out to as many of Congress as possible.
That got to be a little bit of a scary point there. It didn't stick. Which is good news in sort of the climate, political climate we're in. I know that they've moved with a new forest chief. Of the Forest Service has been placed into mm-hmm. this past week, and he came from Region 8, which Gary, that's the region we're in of the Forest Service,
okay.
From Texas to Virginia, and then north up to Kentucky. So. It was, he had only been for about a year, down here, as a chief forester for the Region 8, but he had been here before, starting out as a ranger and then worked in Washington, D.C. He's got pretty wide ranging. So I think at least for Region 8, he's, you know, knows us down here. But also I think he's pretty attuned to, I think, the equine groups, and I think that he's, you know, in the mood for that. I had two chances to meet him. One was he was coming to meet the Backcountry Horsemen chapters here in North Georgia, and that's when the fires broke out in East Tennessee and Great Smoky Mountain National Park and all that. So they couldn't do that one. And then I had an opportunity to meet him again on this regional advisory committee that I just got on. And I spoke at the International Trail Symposium that weekend, asked by the Forest Service too. So, but I think we're going to have a good relationship with the new chief forester, that which is important because we didn't know who was going to be picked, and but it worked out. And the Secretary of Agriculture is from Georgia also, and he's the one that does the appointing, and so he picked someone from. Well, from Georgia, so that worked.
you're a good one to have on that too. So, thankfully, that worked out well for everybody.
Well, there's also I know changes that Joe Mead, who we may have on the show in the future, was head of trails, and he just retired after a long career, and so it's been a lot of change, and so. And having trouble filling positions, and so a lot of things there. So Freddie,
Jim, that's actually one of our challenges is all the changes in the Forest Service,
yes.
Because so many of their members are retiring, And we're seeing great turnovers in all of the ranger districts. And so, you know, part of what we do is develop a relationship with our land managers in our chapters, in our states, in our regions, so that we can assist them and at least have a voice at the table as to what trails are going to be managed, how they're managed, and making sure that we retain our access. And by, you know, making sure that we have access, we offer our services to go and clean those trails, lopping things from horseback or on the ground or creating new trailheads. But the turnover in the Forest Service offices is very challenging for us to maintain those relationships that help us help them.
Well, you could see where that could be the case, because the relationships that are developed on state and local levels are just, I mean, that really is what makes things happen. You know, cooperation is developed that way, and people that have that you have their ear, so that you can, as you said, have a seat at the table to talk about these things that are happening. So what other kind of challenges are we facing right now?
Well, you know, we've talked about the keeping public lands public, and I think that's going to continue to be a focus of backcountry horsemen for a time to come. There's just too much money out there that is wanting access to lands for mineral and other types of exploration. You know, the Secretary Zinke has just been out to, gosh, how many national monuments, and we are still yet to know the details of his recommendations as to whether places like Bears Ear National Monument is going to be changed in any way, and if it's changed, how does that affect our access to the areas that we've been riding?
Mm-hmm.
So it's something that's not going to go away in the near future, and we have to keep talking about it, keep it in the forefront, and not let people use the back door to get in.
Yeah. Isn't it funny how money always seems to be the root to all evil? Is that what they say? And the more things change, the more they stay the same. That really hasn't changed over all these years, as to where money becomes the motivating factor for things that happen. Hey, we want to take a real quick break, and when we come back, I think it will be very interesting to talk about the direction that you see Backcountry Horsemen of America going, and maybe some changes that you'd like to see implemented. But we're going to take a break and talk about the Wild of the West, because again, we think about trail riding out in the West and taking those vacation trips and exploring areas. In my case, I'm dying to go to Bryce Canyon and visit your part of the country out there, Freddie. But we'll come back and talk more with Freddie Dunn and Jim McGarvey in just a moment on Saddle Up America.
When the sun sinks down between the heaven and the ground, on these wide open places that I love, when I take a minute to feel the world in me in it, I thank that heaven above, and I squint my eyes at a tear of all surprise, and I stop and let myself feel small. 'Cause it's all here, my own wild frontier. Aren't we all pioneers after all? Are we all pioneers after all? And I just know that the wild of the West is in my soul. Those out there that need space, not just air, and the wild western wind calls their name in a land that's free. This is where I choose to be. There's no better place than nowhere. There's no better place than nowhere. I need cool water or a lover's caress, and I did not decide. I just know that the wild of the West is in my soul. Surprise, and I stop and let myself feel small, 'cause it's all here, my own wild frontier. Aren't we all pioneers after all? Yes, we're all pioneers after all. I need cool water or a lover's caress, and I did not decide. I just know that the wild of the West, the wild of the West, is in my soul.
That is The Wild of the West by Mary Kay. And Freddie, Mary Kay is out in your part of the country. She makes her home out in Escalante, Utah. You familiar with that little community? Yeah.
Not far, an hour away. Yeah.
Not too far away from you. So anyway, look forward to visiting her when I head out to Bryce Canyon, and we'll have to holler at you too. But I know Jim had some more questions for you.
Well, just the Backcountry Horsemen's organization is a bit different than a lot of other organizations. We are truly grassroots, which makes for interesting, you know, dynamics with being the national chairman and chairwoman. So, Freddie, maybe you could give a little bit of an overview of the structure of the Backcountry Horsemen, and then maybe how you look to see what may be happening and which direction we're going in as we go into the in 2023 will be our 50th anniversary. So Freddie, if throw this wide open ball to you here.
I sure will. As Jim said, we are a grassroots organization, which means we started with members and chapters in states, and that started in the West, in Montana, Idaho, Washington State, and then those states decided that they should join together because they were concerned about access to the backcountry and about the management of the trails. And as we all know, you know, a group can always do better than an individual. And so over the years, states have called Backcountry Horsemen and said, we're having an issue here. they're trying to close this trail. And so we have been able to grow our organization mostly because people had needs and for access into their areas. So now we're in 31 states across America. Going from the East Coast to the West Coast was one of my goals several years ago when I was the expansion chairman, and I was lucky enough that Kansas decided that they should be a backcountry horseman state. And it's a difficult concept to sell to some of the Western states that Eastern states also have issues with trail access. Mm-hmm. For example, in Kansas, most of their riding is grasslands, and they have agencies that none of the rest of the states have, like the Corps of Engineers. A lot of their trails were originally built around reservoirs that were built by the Corps of Engineers, who still manage those. And so they're kind of different fish for the rest of the group. But the point of backcountry horsemen is to educate, to make sure that we maintain the enjoyment of the backcountry, that we keep these trails open, but also to educate our members and other equine users or the general public in the safe and sustainable use of our trails and our America's wilderness and backcountry. And so expanding our organization is a goal. While we do that, we have to make sure that we educate those people in the standards that we hold as backcountry horsemen. We certainly want to be the ones that set the standards that others set their standards by. And so we strive to make sure that in our assistance with public lands, that we do that by following the procedures that are set up. One of the things that I found very interesting when I first came to the national organization was the difference in the relationships between different states and their land managers and my state and the land managers in Utah. There was a great deal of difference in policies and procedures and things that weren't necessarily adhered to or whatever. So that was really interesting. I think one of the biggest things that I would like to accomplish would be sustainable funding for Backcountry Horsemen of America. Although we have 13,000 members in our 31 states, our dues are stretched because we have hired professionals as far as Randy Rasmussen and our management company. And so to effectively achieve the goals that we have, which a lot of them are the education type of goals, where we want to be able to collect information from all of our different states and collate it and put it somewhere where it's available to all of our members. Being able to do these extra things, having booths, having literature, having getting Randy to be able to go out and speak at all of the venues that he could possibly be speaking takes money. And we've been very fortunate to have some very generous donors. It's tough to find organizations that will give us grants nationally because we are looking for administrative type of grants, and people and foundations want project-based grants.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes it a little bit more difficult for us to find sustainable funding to be able to do the things at the national level that we could do to help support and enhance our chapters in our states. So I think that's one of the biggest things that I'd like to do is try to establish some type of sustainable funding for the future. One of the things that we've done, Jim, in fact, started was our legacy program. Jim, why don't you talk a little bit about that, and then we'll talk about how Steve has taken that over.
Okay, yeah. There's 1.5 million 501(c)(3)s in America. So,
wow.
Yeah, that's a woe. And so you have to, in order to, we, for 43 years, 44 years, and a lot of organizations operate sort of on an annual budget with their registration money and membership dues and that kind of thing, and which is we've been doing. And we have fundraisers through the year with our members. But it's more of a kind of a piecemeal basis, and so looking for a longer range way to say guarantee the backcountry horsemen will be working on the trails 50 years from now, and the trails will still be there for our kids and grandkids. We've looked towards starting a legacy fund, wherein folks would be kicking this off more formally here in the end towards the end of this year, but where folks can put us in their will, but and donate to an endowment, which is, you know, over long term or more short term money that it might see that would help. They can direct it specifically to this part of the organization, or maybe this chapter that they're near, or their state organization, or to the national organization. And what the reason that that works well. Is what we're offering this service, not to say, why don't you give us some money? I'm saying backcountry horsemen, why don't you give us some money? But it's a service, the way we have it structured, outsourcing with Crescendo International out of California. They have all the big colleges. They have parts of Red Cross, parts of Salvation Army. They're the number one back room organization to facilitate doing your will, where to go to find an attorney, how to do it, questions to ask. There's a lot of questions to ask when you're thinking about doing a will and with annuities or just land. You can be cash poor, land rich, and or vice versa, which probably be more preferable, I suppose. But in any event, we're going to be offering this service not for, say, give backcountry horsemen money, but here are the tools to design a will or update your will or things to think about before you do a will. And then if you want to give some to the backcountry horsemen, that's fine. What this also does, it puts us further out from just our membership. So folks that, you know, you might be sitting in your rocking chair in New Jersey and may have never crossed the Mississippi or been west of Mississippi, but you know there's Yellowstone out there, and there's horses, and there's trails, and you want to keep them open. And so it's sort of that image that you don't have to have a horse, you don't have to, you know, been on the trails, but just the concept works for you. And so what our people do as members, we average about 400,000 volunteer hours a year, and that can be around $14 or $15 million in value. And plus you have to have pickup. We probably all have horses anyway, that are in the organization. We may not have as many with mules and pack mules and et cetera, but you have to have a pickup truck, and you have to have the trailers and the diesel fuel and chainsaws and work days and taking off from work on some instances. And so to get on these trails. So our folks give, you know, millions and millions of dollars in sweat and in cash just to get to pull this off. And so we're looking to expand this kind of a different venue that's more sustaining over time so that we can be here 50 years in the future. And and with Steve McClintock, national director from Arizona, who has a long background and around the world in finance, was his career. Steve is picking that up, and we're adding a committee with that. And so there'll be more things in the mail. And also tell your friends that aren't members, that maybe not horse owners, to consider our will service and possibly leave a gift. I hope I've covered that a little bit there, Freddie. So.
Yeah, you have. And Jim brought up a point, Gary, that's so difficult for us to translate to potential funding organizations. Many times on an application, Jim and I have looked through it, and they want to see how much their members support them financially above and beyond their dues.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, we've got people who are out there spending thousands of dollars on their animals, on their vehicles, on their travel, that any extra money that they have goes to support that part of what they do. And mm-hmm. so we don't necessarily have the donations internally that show up on a balance sheet.
Right.
If we could monetize that sweat equity, they would see, potential funders would see that our members donate a huge amount of money, but it's just not in cash.
Right.
So it's a challenge that we have.
Well, we've talked before on the show, Jim, about how many hours that Backcountry Horsemen members contribute, and I think we've talked about the dollar value before of those man hours or person hours, in helping to keep the trails open, and so it's literally millions of dollars that are
literally
donated, yeah. Literally millions of dollars that are donated in time to do the work that needs to be done to keep the trails open. And yeah, when you talk about the expense of the livestock, and you talk about the expense of the trucks and the trailers and the fuel and the food and, you know, all of those things, it's just a huge, huge donation of time and contributions that Backcountry Horsemen of America make to keep these trails open for all trail riders and other users of the trails.
And even in those hours and dollar value, there's not all is in. I know just myself, I don't turn all my hours in. You know, you say, oh, I forgot to do, you know, that one day. And I think probably happens to some on a, or, you know, chapter level and all the way up. There's some factor that could be 20% more than we actually do, or 25. I don't know. But I think, Freddie, you probably experienced the same thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's but it's out there. It's a lot.
It's tough. And another goal that I'd like to accomplish is to try and make sure that Backcountry Horsemen of America is not the best kept secret in America. And
Amen.
We do that by having wonderful people like you who invite us to talk to your listening audience. And we try to do that with literature. We do it at the chapter level, when we're out on the trail, most of us have signs that say Backcountry Horseman is working on this trail. And more than once, I've come back from a work project and there's a sticky note on that sign that says, thank you from a grateful hiker.
Yeah.
And that's really cool.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we've got to blow our horn. We've got to get Randy out to speak to organizations where there are people who have appreciate the quality of the trails that we help maintain. You've got different organizations now who are partnering up against the federal land grab, and it's giving us a different audience, which is a little bit unique this year. So hopefully the associations that we have, because of different issues, will help us become a little better known across America. So
yeah,
that's a pretty lofty goal right there.
Well, you know, I'm just sitting here listening, and thinking about the fact that there's so many businesses that are dependent on trail users, and there's some little small communities that maybe are at trailheads that their business is what it is because you've got people that are coming in and they're buying their gas, they're buying their groceries, they're buying the sandwiches, just because they're coming to a particular area to ride or hike and enjoy the enjoy nature out there. So yeah, send Randy out to all the chambers of commerces that are out there in these targeted areas. Yeah. He'll love that. But anyway, it is as you said, it's important to just in the trail riding community for people to recognize backcountry mm-hmm. horsemen in America and to understand what it is that they're doing. And so many trail riders that I've talked with through the years are not even aware of backcountry horsemen of America and what it does.
So I will. And you got people out there riding and they're just thinking how beautiful this is. Well, in many cases, they should thank the backcountry horsemen.
That's right. Yeah, that is exactly right. But just kudos to this Middle Tennessee Backcountry Horseman group. I know that they're going to be at the state fair, and I'm not sure when that starts, but just in the next few days, they'll be there with a booth talking to folks that are coming in for the fair. And I know that we've got backcountry horsemen organizations that will show up at horse expos and different events to try to get the word out. But publicity is a challenge, and awareness of what people are doing continues to be a challenge as well. And one of the things that I appreciate about Backcountry Horsemen is that they are one organization that helps to make people aware of the challenges that are being faced today in continued access to these trails. So folks need to get involved, and they need to become members of Backcountry Horsemen of America. And if you can't get out there and help clear a trail, contribute something, dollar-wise, monetarily, and keep that going.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Absolutely. So, we appreciate our checkbook members.
They're important. They're important. You know, there are a lot of folks that yeah. maybe they're sitting in that rocking chair in New Jersey and can't get out anymore to the national parks, but they have those memories, and doesn't take much to purchase a little $5,000 life insurance policy and set it up in a trust to be sent back country horse mm-hmm. in America for use. So
there you go.
A lot of ways to do that. So, well, what kind of closing thoughts do we have today, Miss Reddy? What would you like to share with folks?
Closing thoughts. First would be safety, especially with the fires that are going on in the West in Montana. In fact, the fire season started off here in Utah, about an hour north of me at Bryan Head, where we had just an amazing fire that was human caused. And now we have fires in Montana, Idaho, Washington, and Oregon, and California that are devastating. People can't leave their homes because the air quality is so bad. The Facebook pages for the backcountry horsemen groups in those states are just filled with information on fire closures and safety information. So the first thing we want to make sure is that we educate our members as to safety and etiquette and making sure that everyone gets home safely at the end of the day. But we also want to say that Backcountry Horsemen, again, is a service organization. We're not a riding club. We don't try and get out and socialize all the time, but we do a lot of riding and we do a lot of socializing too. Mm-hmm. So people who are coming out to the arena, maybe they no longer want to be working in arena, want to get their horse out on the trail, contact your local backcountry horseman. We've got our website at bcha.org, and we would be more than happy to introduce people leaving the arena to the wonderful world of trail riding.
All right. And Jim, any closing thoughts that you might want to share?
I just second all of Freddie's comments. Well done.
All right. Freddie, what does it feel like and what does it mean to you to be the first woman chairman of Backcountry Horsemen of America?
I assure you that it is a very humbling position to be in. And one of the promises that I made to the members of the founding state, Montana, was that I would make sure that backcountry horsemen maintained their heritage and kept their vision of education and public service. And so I intend to do that. And again, try to make backcountry horsemen someone and an entity that people are proud to want to get involved with.
Well, those are great thoughts and goals, and I'm sure that you will be a leader that they are proud of. And we so appreciate you being on the show and sharing with us today. And look forward to having you back. Look forward to having you back with us. Yeah. And Jim, every first Thursday, it's always a joy to have Jim on and find out what's going on the ground with folks with Backcountry Horsemen of America. And we might just want to mention, too, Backcountry Horsemen of America members have been heavily involved in helping to combat these fires. Tell us a little bit about what they do with that, Jim.
Well, I know that, and Freddie knows well, that our folks do a lot of work in bringing, packing in supplies, tools, lots of different folks, supplies for these fires, because often even the helicopters can't get in there. And so within the rugged country, we're able to help out there. We've got we've had Phil Hufstetter on the show last summer speaking of the, and he's had decades of experience really with helping out there. And so I can say that with this wildfire season getting completely out of hand, I know just the beginning of the summer in the San Bernardino National Forest, which is a different part of the one that's burning today out there in the LA area, our folks were written up with helping out there, bringing in the fire supplies and helping the Forest Service and the Park Service and the state of California in that instance. So I think our folks, they're attuned to that. We know when we're clearing the trails during the rest of the year that this could be a lifeline should a fire start. And so it's what they do, a lot of what our folks do out west.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we want to keep all the folks.
I know a lot of.
Go ahead, Freddie.
I know a lot of our chapters, Gary, have spent the entire summer just going, packing in 25 miles, packing stuff back out, turning around and doing the whole thing again the next day. And it's been their entire summer has been involved doing that. So it's believe me, it's hard work to get a pack string ready to go into the backcountry.
Yeah. I shared a post from your Facebook page about mules that were getting back in to pack into some areas that were not accessible any other way. And man, I don't know. I think we had several thousand hits on that thing. People were just appreciative and I think in many cases surprised at the work that's being done. So thank you both for everything that Backcountry Horsemen of America does for all of us that enjoy getting out and riding the trails. And again, you can visit bcha.org and become a member, get involved in your local areas, and some great stories and articles and updates about what's happening as far as trail use in our country. But anyway, you guys have been great. Look forward to having you back with us again. And we'll talk to you soon, Jim, on Saddle Up America. Thank you so much. Thank you, Freddie.
Thank you, Gary.
Thank you very much.
All righty. Well, as always, it is informative when we have Jim and his guests join us for Saddle Up America. And we appreciate our audience for listening. We want to remind you, as always, to tune in to our shows that begin on Thursdays with the Campfire Cafe and then followed by Saddle Up America. And we'll remind you, as we always do, if you climb in the saddle, get ready for the ride on Equestrian Legacy Radio, heard on your smartphone and streaming live, online, and on demand at equestrianlegacy.net. And we'll close out the show today with a great song from Dale Shields and Stephanie Lane. It's called Somewhere in the Rubies. Thanks for listening. If I
knew which way to go, I would hold you in my arms again. I'd find the winding road again that leads back to you.
And those ruby mountain storms, they can't keep me from you anymore. I centered on the desert floor. I'm so far from you.
Takes until the end of time. Pray you still wait for me somewhere in the rubies
somewhere in the rubies tonight.
Somewhere.